Winter, spring, summer, fall, seasons change. We still keep it together.
Hey, Beverly Hills 90210 fans, are you ready to dive deep? Episode by episode, storyline by storyline, character by character, as we break down the making of your favorite zip code with your host, Charles Rosen.
Did I say that?
Jeez. Mary Mullen.
This heinous thing about the real person, and we go, what? We're getting rid of this guy.
Pete Ferrero.
I'm feeling wonderful. Kathleen looks crush, TV crush worthy.
Like so many special guests and all your questions. Live on the Beverly Hills 90210 show. Oh, yeah.
Everybody dance now.
Well, hey there. We are back live. This is great. I mean, it's been a minute since we've been together live on the Beverly Hills 90210 show. Always start with the leader of the pack. No offense to everybody else. Chuck Rosen, how are you doing these days in Venice? Are you in Venice?
No, we're in Marina Del Rey. We're not in the wonderful house on the Marina Peninsula anymore. We're in the hotel. We're really sick of the hotel, but it's dog friendly, and it is a nice view there. So we're there. This weekend, we're going to a wedding up in Wine Country in Santa Barbara County.
Nice.
We'll come back. We'll have about 4 or 5 more days of hard work, and then I think we might be in this house finally after coming into 9 months.
This is incredible. You're like a little bit like Dylan McKay living in the hotel at this point, right? Yeah. And Larry Mullen.
It's very funny that Air France, I think of Dylan, you think of him on the phone, you know, talking French. Air France air crew comes in there. So people are talking French in the elevators all the time.
No idea what they're saying, right?
No, none.
Larry Mullen, you're on the East Coast. What's going on? How was your trip?
You know, it's clamming season has begun. You know, we're out in the island, Martha's Vineyard, and just kind of living the life on the small island. You know, just it's really nice in May because it's really quiet. And, you know, we have a couple of friends here, and, you know, tourists haven't really arrived, and kind of got the island to ourselves. It's kind of sweet.
Did you have to do the whole thing with the car this year where you put the...
I had 2 cars. And the one car, which has been here the longest, didn't start. I had to
bring
it in. And the guy at the station said, this battery is from 2011. It's a Hall of Fame battery. So,
did you really think it was going to work?
Break down and buy a new one? Did you,
yes, I did.
Do it?
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, all the cars are running. Everything's going. The islands. You know, everything's green. You know, it's just it's very lovely.
And then of course, joining us here is Erin Clements, a reporter and someone who's been on our show many times before. How is everything going with you?
It's good. I'm in New York. I just finished a mini season 4 rewatch for tonight.
Nice. Yeah.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Real quick, before I know someone asked, are we going to talk about baseball tonight? How is everybody's teams doing? Chuck, you're in first place. I know that.
We are in first place, and with a lesser team than the other teams that have been in first place. Yes. Not sure we're going to end up in first place.
Right.
Actually, we just we were more into our resurgent Lakers there for a while, but that ended. So we're back to baseball, and that's okay.
My team is really all over the place. Sometimes we can win. Sometimes the Mets can win. Sometimes they lose. I have no idea what's going to happen this season. Larry, how are the Red Sox?
You know, I didn't expect much. So they've been entertaining. And they just, you know, they're having a tough road trip now. The Angels have beat them twice in a row. But the Angels look pretty damn good. They finally seem to be coming together. But yes. The interesting thing is they have 2 big old lefty pitchers who have pitched really well the last couple of games, Chris Sale and Jim Paxton. You know, if those guys can hold it up, they've got a lot of young players. So it's been entertaining. I got nothing.
And Erin, how's your team doing?
What is your team?
Do you have a team?
I don't really have one, honestly. Sometimes Mets, sometimes Yankees.
That's the baseball minute.
But I did get to hang out with Erin a couple months ago, right? I mean, it was a few months ago. We got to hang out in the city
February.
And went to that cool little bar and whatnot. I also hung out with Mark Damon Espinosa, guys, maybe a week ago or 2 weeks ago. And he said hi and hope you all are well. So
nice. Did he come to your
he
movie?
Came no he came to we just met for dinner in Pasadena. But Michael Lang came to the screening that I had.
I saw that.
Yes, and my friend Paul
couldn't be there.
No, that's
so
okay.
I just, the movie.
There will be more times and more screenings and more hangouts.
Congratulations on that. That's great.
Okay, so we have a lot to talk about. I think we should play an old ad and then get into it that way. This is an old ad. I don't know what it's called.
Well, well, well. When was the last time you checked out the Beverly Hills 90210 Show shop? Because now it's loaded with so much more stuff. Did you ever want to join the gang at CU? Because now you can wear your official CU t-shirt. Or want to get into the fun with America's zip code? Represent with this cool swag. Or maybe you have an invite to the Peach Pit After Dark and need the coolest shirt ever. We have loaded the store with so much more. So don't be a squeeze. Head over to Beverly Hills 90210showshop.com for all the latest goods.
Okay, an old ad, and now we're.
I got to get some stuff. I realize I'm.
It's been a minute. And we have new things there. There's a lot more new things.
When you said old ad, I thought there was going to be a promo for.
I did too, Chuck. I said, "Oh my god!
Oh, I wish I should have done that. That would have been such a better idea.
Yeah,
I should consult you guys hours ago.
So you know, he's all on our own out here. But
all right, Brian Navarro says, "Missed seeing you on here, Chuck."
Yeah, well, they coerced me to come back.
Come out of retirement.
And thank you for that, Brian.
Nice Tammy says her Orioles are doing
well. Yeah, they are doing really well.
And I think of you every time I look at it. I do too.
I said, well, at least Tammy's enjoying this.
Yeah, let her go to the postseason.
Yeah. Beat the Yankees. I like that.
This is a mystery comment. Pete, did you mention Robin Lopez wearing the shirt? I don't know what that means. Oh, that's a basketball player.
Yeah,
I think that's a basketball player,
yeah,
Chuck.
Of course. Yeah.
On social media, he had the RCU shirt.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, the Beverly Hills 90210 shirt.
Were they Harvard Westlake graduate guys? They were twins. Brooks so and that
was,
Lopez.
The Lopez's were, no, those guys were Stanford.
Stanford.
Yeah.
I was in total shock when I saw someone.
Very cool.
All right,
and
let's talk about
that. Also, you just mentioned that you know Luke's son. Apparently, you know they used the whole death of his father in a ring storyline.
The press, you know? Pro wrestling thing.
You know they really went at it. Like, and he's the babyface, and the heel is a guy I know, who I know is Christian. Now he's called Christian Cage, a really good guy and a terrific heel. You know he's a terrific heel because he's not a big guy, but he's so hateable.
When you were doing WWE, when you were working at WWE and you got together with your entertainment friends and just said what you just said, but about some wrestling storyline, did you feel like they don't know what I'm talking about? Like they
probably.
No, what he thought was say it to me, wrestling stories, and D, we heard probably more of them, and neither of us cared a bit. But listen, because he's Larry. And
right, of course.
He got this need to go out with the wrestlers for some
and Hulk Hogan's and Hulk Hogan said, and this one said, like that kind of.
We should try to get Christian on the show because he's
definitely
on the show. That'd be good. He liked me. I was trying to get him to come to Hollywood. I thought he was like a Kiefer Sutherland.
I think he's a huge 90210 fan. Nothing.
Why did this come up?
Larry brought it up, so I just
because all of a sudden it showed up because the storyline was on TV.
I passed him the ball. This is where he went.
You're nothing. Your father, you know, he just kind of goes out the real thing. And also Luke's widow and his sister, Sophie, was there at the thing. Also part of the action.
They're part of the act. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was like a family, you know, they kind of exposed the reality. And, that's what wrestling does well.
Very interesting stuff. Okay. Let's talk about Goodbye, Brenda.
Please.
There's a lot to talk about here. And I have some fun clips and from the back in the day. I guess we start with you, Chuck. There is no way that we would think at that time, as a fan, as a viewer, okay, the lead character is going, one of the lead characters is going to leave. That doesn't happen a lot in television. You know, Suzanne Summers is an example of some of a scenario where that unfolded. Did you ever think that would be the case early in the early phase of the issues with Shannon?
I think some people might know this. A letter was written to Aaron Spelling at the end of season one by Paul Wagner asking to recast.
So as early as season one.
Season one, mostly he was anticipating what we could look forward to. With Shannon, you know, someday, you know, and by the way, that was his, and Aaron didn't pay attention to it. I never had a conversation with Aaron about it. There was no way he was going to make a change on such a valuable member at that point, and especially when we had just pulled the idea that after season one, I'm late, so that almost had to have
right
be back there. I think that they gotten a little, fans may remember that at the end of season one, it was the only time you saw Brenda and Dylan beneath the sheets.
Right.
And boy, everybody was pissed off about that. I can't even tell you. I had no idea. It was a cold afternoon. What are they supposed to do? Be on the up on the sheets and see what that looks like? No. So anyway, and I think that words were spoken. I happened to be in Hawaii with Darren Star at the time, trying to see what we got to make spring dance work, and know that I had a 2-week vacation, a 1-week vacation before we would jump back into 29 episodes, which I learned only a week before that. So I wasn't there for all that friction, but I understand there was friction. And there was friction sometimes when you least expected it. You know, I've said on this broadcast, and then I'll be quiet and let you go forward here, Pete. I said on the broadcast in season one, about the strike vote. You know, there we were at about episode six, in season one, and we were. Is that me?
You hear music?
Yes.
I'm hearing music somewhere. Where is it? Is that you, Larry? Is that someone at your home?
Oh, it must be those.
I don't hear anything.
People, or it's just.
I hear some little bit of dialogue leaking through.
All right, it's over. It's gone.
Okay, bye.
Very odd.
So there we were having the vote with the union, and I had, and Shannon, you know, it's not her business. She's not a member of this of IATSE. She's not in that room for that. And she grabs the microphone and urges everybody to go on strike and take what they should get. And they get it, and they're not being treated fair, and they're working so hard, and they're the best crew in Hollywood, and you know, and then she hands me the microphone. I say rightly that we're one of the lowest rated shows in Hollywood, and if you want to kill it, vote to strike right now. You vote to strike, and I doubt we'll be back here in 2 days. They may not move quick enough to end it, but that was my pitch, and we won by one vote to keep the show going. I bring that up because Shannon, in those years, and I would be a real idiot to try to equate Shannon in the 5 years I worked together with her to what happened the moment after that, all the way through to her life today.
Right.
I can't make any judgment. I don't know. I don't interact. But right. In those times, you just didn't really know what you to expect. And it was that wild card left you very unsettled. What was it going to be like on the set? What was it going to be like from the business perspective? And I realized when you told me this was going to be our topic, that I'm in the bad spot here, because you guys are all going to talk about, and the fans are all going to talk about the wonderful performances and the wonderful character growth and all of the different things. And yet all of that is part of a process, and the process was messed up. And, you know, if it happened because one of our stars wanted to work with a different star and scramble things up, and the writers went along with it, and it didn't have to be permanent. And B, that was just us trying to find a way to recover from was a lousy way to end season two. To the fact that, I mean, it was what was done in network television at the time, the backdoor pilot. But what Luke Perry was pissed off about is that our show was there to service Melrose Place, not right. about us. And he wanted to be back again us. And his way he thought to do it was to use his own romantic sensuality and put it on somebody else and scramble it up.
Right.
And why? And given everything up, because truth was, season two was really, in terms of, we're going to be talking more in this one about Shannon's behavior. Season two was a happy time seemed to be a happy time for her working together. We had a lot. I remember being with her the night of the Golden Globes, having a lot of fun. She had a really sweet boyfriend from Chicago at the time, a guy named Chris Fufus. She just was a happy girl. When somebody's happy, you want to be around the happy person. When someone's really unhappy, you're on your guard. So I speak to Shannon. I remember being on my guard a lot of times because I didn't have that much conflict in my personal life. I didn't know much about it.
So at some point, it's explosive and everybody is talking about it. Here's a couple clips I have. I mean, Larry, should I ask you, when you came in season four, what was your knowledge of this? What were you told? Did you interact with her? What was your experience like at that time?
No, I didn't have any preconceived. I wasn't kind of led any way that she there was a, you know, because we were breaking story there, and I you know was fortunate because I had a lot of Dylan and Brenda thing and Little Fish, the first thing I wrote, so it was just, you know, just really great fun and just admiring what she did, you know, and it was a good thing there, but you know, as the year went by, I would hear all the stories, of course, but yeah, when I first came in there, no one pre. Set me
so
up.
So you didn't know that Shannon was maybe on her way out at
well,
the top of
season. I had worked with, I look, stars were stars. I mean, they're not, you know, I mean, like I've worked with, you know, a lot of stars, which are difficult. And
also, remember,
you expect that. I was not surprised by it. Just that's what it was. I just tried to, unlike Chuck, I didn't have to go to the set. You know, I came up from the school where as a writer, you never talked to the actors. You didn't go to the set. Only bad things would happen if you did that.
and the truth is that the writers, when Larry started in the group of four, we were the only people there. It was the only time we didn't rush back to do summer episodes. So we had a time off for a period of time. So you really weren't hanging out with the cast or the crew in your first 2-3 months there.
No. Plus, that's when we started doing double ups too. I mean, we were on the set a lot. But you know, there just wasn't time. I mean, I also was probably the oldest one there. I wish I was. So yeah, I was
a couple of things.
Well, in the writers' room, you sure were.
Yeah.
Here's what Darren Star had to say about it in an old interview I pulled.
Partying and behaving like they should, like they would be in their 20s, but by the sort of like you know yardstick of like what goes on today, they were just like kind of living their lives. Obviously, you know, Shannon was a handful. But I always feel like she brought so much of that fiery spirit to her character, which was so great for the show. And yeah, they were like, they were burning the candle at both ends and they were living like rock stars.
Mm-hmm. And so Shannon actually did leave the show in season four.
Right.
Why did she leave?
I think it was like, I think it was mutual, everybody, I think, you know, it got to the point where the cast was just sort of like, had enough of Shannon, and Shannon probably had enough of the whole, I think she needed to like, you know, be free from all this for a while, but it wasn't long before Aaron Spelling, you know, she was starring in another Aaron Spelling show, mm-hmm. Charmed.
Mm-hmm.
So she's, I mean, Shannon's a terrific actress, and I think is like, you know, always felt as incredibly key to the success of the show.
It's well said. That's all.
Do you have any thoughts on that, Chuck?
Sure. Well, he's also was you know wasn't there by season four.
Right.
That wasn't his conversations anymore. And I think that Aaron Spelling is one of those people that always, in some ways, in a stretch, you know, similar to Trump, in that if you needed somebody, they were your friend again. You may have had a terrible row. You may have had a falling out. But boy, wouldn't this be perfect if this could happen? So he made amends. And his conversations about Shannon were not consistent.
Right.
So, and the conversations that he had about Shannon behind closed doors would think that he would never have put himself in a situation to be working with her again. But he had a show with three young actresses and he wanted some television heat, and they became really close friends again. Did I think that Aaron Spelling and his wife treated Shannon unfairly? Yes.
Well, this is some of the stuff.
There was not that much difference in the behavior of Tori and Shannon, but okay. There was some.
That's what I was going to get at. Yeah.
Well, let's a few things here. A few questions here. One, he alludes to them becoming overnight successes in rocks and living this sort of rock star life. Did you see all of the cast have that experience, Chuck? I'm sure the answer is
yes. I didn't see that because I'm a good boy. I went home to my wife and children. Thank you.
You heard about it though.
Not everybody in our writer's room did that, but I did. but the fact is that it was known that some of the there were the clubbers and the people who didn't club, and Brian, Tori, Brenda were often at the clubs. Luke spent his nights playing pool a lot up at the Hollywood Y. Jason would be home with Christine. They lived together up in the Hollywood Hills. Have no idea what Jenny did not club, was not a clubber. I don't know what she did that period of time. Well, but anyway, so yeah, we knew that. And, you know, and you hear stories about, you know, that their generation made the bad choice of dabbling in cocaine again.
Yeah, the Viper
there
Room.
There was a lot of cocaine on our set.
Chuck, do you think that Mr. Spelling thought that Shannon was a bad influence on Tori? I always felt that also was a motivating factor why he let, as Darren alludes to, the other kids have kind of had enough of things, because in the clubbing aspect, Shannon also had a photographic memory, I believe, because she could come in after partying all night and hit all the lines and everything. And it was infuriating.
Well, Shannon had it Larry, Shannon would go to the set sometimes in that period of time, I've been told by other actors, and ask, what are we shooting? I mean, even as far out as what episode is this, but what are we shooting? What are we doing? Not knowing it, and using blocking to
learn the lines,
to familiarize herself with the material, and wham, she shows up on the set.
Love it.
I think Brian would acknowledge that, you know, we needed him to raise his game a little bit, especially when we were doing the next 50 years, the gun show. And I was asked specifically to tell him, you know, come on, you know, you got to be more than this. And I just said, you're not. And he may not remember. I'm sure he does, because it was kind of harsh. I said, you're not Shannon Doherty. Mm. You have to know your lines. You have to go in the set. You have to be prepared. You can't do what he does. It was pretty amazing. And how are you going to fault somebody's process?
Yes.
When it's working so well, and it was working well creatively for Shannon, except for one period of time. And when we get Aaron into this conversation, really want to know your thoughts about her in that first, I'd say, arc, especially with the boy and the family and all that. You know, how did that Brenda Walsh dovetail with all the other Brenda Walshes you had seen in the other seasons? Not the Brenda Walsh of the end of the season four, but in the beginning to middle of season four.
Oh, you're talking about Stuart Carson?
Yeah, Stuart Carson.
Yeah. Aaron, that was for you.
I mean, I wasn't the biggest fan of that relationship. I think the Brenda at the end of season four, I think, is what resonated with the fans more.
Yes, I absolutely.
You know, with the Dylan.
And you look at her complexion, and you know she was burning the candle at both ends.
Yes.
You know, that the kabuki look isn't something that's made up in a makeup room. That was there and had to deal with it. She just wasn't happy.
She eloped during the show.
That too.
She eloped.
Our friend Brian Navarro brings up a good point that Brad, just to your point, Chuck, that bag definitely upped his game in the series at that point when you had that conversation. We agree that he did.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And he was a real professional about the whole thing and remained such, and I think became such a valuable part of this TV show in the post Rosen years because of his approach to his craft.
So I'm going to try to play some of this A Current Affair stuff. It's very long, but I'll chop it up if I can. But this is the kind of stuff that you guys were dealing with, and I'm sure there's more stories like this, but this is essentially, I think, the quintessential of all of it.
What year, Pete?
Shannon 91. Doherty hits back over that club clash and tells of the pressures of life as a 90210 star.
I often go home at night crying because I just don't understand why I'm getting such a bad rap.
Shannon Doherty has had to pay a steep price for her fame. When she got into a shoving match at an L.A. nightclub last week, the press labeled it a superstar tantrum. Not true, according to Shannon. She claims it's just part of the battle she's constantly fighting as a young star in Hollywood.
I don't know, maybe in some ways I antagonized it a little bit by being a very outspoken young person, but I think the only thing I can do is make myself happy, and if that means standing up for myself, then that's what I have to do.
The starlet further explained that even while she stands up for herself, all the bad publicity is no laughing matter.
I often go home at night crying because I just don't understand why I'm getting such a bad rap.
And that bad rap goes way beyond just fisticuffs in a nightclub. Shannon also answered allegations of drug and alcohol abuse.
You know, it's ludicrous. That's just people trying to pick on me. Getting hit in a club is a totally other situation. You know, it's just an out-of-control girl who has, you know, whatever, some problems for whatever reasons. Bad press. I don't know. Just leave me alone. That's all I want.
But rumors are rampant in Hollywood that all this bad press is harming the starlet's skyrocketing career.
Thank you. I don't think about anything. I just try, you know, I ignore it all and I do my job and I give 100% to what I do. And hopefully, you know, people get over it and they'll understand what really happened and what's the truth of me and who I am. I just think it's better not to hide from a situation, you know, and I'm here to say that I'm an innocent victim in this case and I have nothing to hide. Maybe she should be in hiding, but not me.
So there was a scuffle, I guess, at a club. And
that, you know when that scuffle took place, right?
Go ahead, Chuck. I don't know if you want to share.
A scuffle at the Roxbury.
Yeah.
And it was hit the same. And that afternoon, Jenny, Luke, and Shannon were in Roxbury Park in Beverly Hills filming the scene where she goodbye where they let Brenda know that they were a couple.
So, she looks so gorgeous there.
She does. But she's, you know, listen, she's a very talented actor. She says a lot of interesting things. We're looking back on this clip 30 something years later now, whatever it is. I don't know. The numbers scares me every time I hear it. I'm sure it's. But she says that she doesn't understand why she's getting a bad rep. And she alludes that she's getting a lot of bad press. This is really the origins of sort of this TMZ Current Affair tabloid TV stuff where we're seeing this every night. She's on the most popular television show. She's a young actress. I have to imagine this was not easy for someone to deal with when all she wanted to do was be an actress and go party.
Wasn't there an I Hate Brenda?
We were furious. I actually had a pretty angry phone call with Peter Chernin about it. That's saying, what do you have? And it was, they had this woman doing it, but you know, it was Bill O'Reilly who was Current Affair mostly. And he'd go after her every night. And we said, what are you doing? We're your television show. We're Fox. Why do you want to pick on? Aaron was mad and called up and had that conversation. I think he said he had conversations with them. And I rarely talked to Peter during the show, but this one was Peter. Don't you have any control over what your good guys are doing in the syndication side? Because we're really concerned here that this is also, I think I use the word self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, the more you put the spotlight on it, the more it heats up. And we don't want that. We just want to make...
What was the I Hate Brenda? Remember there was the I Hate Brenda whole movement? There was a whole other club of that.
Yes.
You remember that, Aaron? What was that about?
Do you have any stuff about that or not?
I don't have anything about that. I know that that was a thing. Well, so where?
Yeah, I was aware of it, but...
Yeah.
Well, I Hate Brenda came... Mookie Betts just hit a solo home run, so we take a 1-0 lead.
You can get Dodger baseball updates here, so
you need them. You need them, group. You know it. I know. You know, Tammy appreciates it. I'm sorry, I got so excited about Mookie.
I Hate Brenda.
Oh,
I hate.
Okay, Brenda. So that happened right at. There are a few things happened right at the same time, and 1992 in Houston, Texas, Shannon goes down and leads a Pledge of Allegiance in the Republican National Convention.
Oh,
and it's the same night that Pat Buchanan did a cultural warrior speech. The kind of thing now that we have every single night from the
fucking
Grand Old Party and Trump and MAGA and Newsmax and all these other places. But then it was completely like nobody was compared for the racism, the homophobia, the things that Pat Buchanan kind of spoke about that night, about the culture war going on in the United States. And she was there on that stage. And the next day, she comes back to Los Angeles. That was a Saturday night, whenever, or that weekend, whenever it was. The MTV Awards was at Pauley Pavilion. And she got booed. And that was the same day the I Hate Brenda thing came out. And so what Shannon says is, well, of course I got booed. Look at how he writes me. I didn't use my name, but look at how they write
me. They write me.
Wow. This is so I didn't know any of this.
So that's when the lines were calcified.
Right.
Right then. You know, obviously, I didn't. I didn't vote for George Herbert Walker Bush, but
I'm not surprised.
But I didn't care that you know anybody would,
right?
But you know, if you were managed, if you did listen to people, if you did, and she did not, she had managers at that time. I don't know if they told her. You would try to talk a 20-year-old girl from
don't go there
down there, and you know, in a liberal town like Hollywood. And in a liberal culture like we have in Los Angeles, and feeling it was so important to be the person leading that group in the Pledge of Allegiance. So I think that might have, I think that contributed to at least the I Hate Brenda stuff.
Sure.
I Hate Brenda stuff was partially, it was dual. The person who did it, or the people who were behind it, they used Shannon's personal life. And whenever we had to be a 8 o'clock primetime television show and, some of the stuff that would be, more treacly than others, maybe they would criticize us for that, making Brenda whine or the kind of things that would happen that we, a lot out of context. And you know what? I thought Gawker and Jezebel and all those things were pieces of shit.
Yeah.
And they all went out of business and they the ones that set up the TMZ tone.
Yes.
And I Hate Brenda is just partial of that. America wasn't a great place and we know that. You saw the civil rights movement. You saw the things. This country has always had problems. But we weren't as mean and vile and public as we were. And it started right then with Gawker and Jezebel and carried on with TMZ. That snarky attitude, and Shannon did suffer from that, and it wasn't fair. But I don't think she had. I also she had a strong personality, and I sat in rooms with the people who did represent her, and I don't think she had strong management. Certainly didn't have a strong enough management that a young actress at that time could have used.
Yeah, I mean, looking back at it all these years later, Chuck, do you feel that? That she got bad press, that she did something, that it was that it was harder for her maybe in looking back on it than than in being in it when you're in it and you're talking to Aaron about it. It's different than now looking back on it all these years later.
Chuck, who was her agent? I'm curious now. So she wasn't, it didn't have a big agency behind her.
I'm thinking of the people I went to meetings with William Morris.
Oh, so it was William Morris. So she was with a big agency.
It was after Nick Stevens.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, I know Nick. Yeah.
Sure. Well, Nick was his Nick was Jason and Shannon's.
Yeah, agent. Yeah. So I know he was Jason. That was the my Nick story. Yeah. He's the one who killed
but
me.
But do you have a reason? Yeah. Chuck.
What was the question?
Well, the question is basically like you're looking back at this 31 years later. I mean, she obviously, do you feel like she had a bad rep? And is there something that could have been done that would have been different? Is there a way that this?
Well, I think I have thought for a long time, probably less now than I did then, but that just too much interest was paid to celebrities and celebrity culture. And now celebrities are involved in every aspect of our society, and they're activists, and it's a different world. But sure. Back then, it was like, you know, why were you so fascinated by this or that or the other? And so I felt that yes, Shannon, you know, what did it matter? A fight in a club is one thing, but what did it matter if she partied? What did it matter if she had multiple boyfriends?
What before, does it matter? What you mentioned to me, you said here before, Chuck, that
live and let live, let people be alone until they get forced their way into your space.
Here's Shannon's sort of position, right? She's getting all this bad press from her lifestyle, partying and whatnot. She's really under the microscope. It's probably a lot of pressure. Plus, whatever she is doing out, she's the effects of that. And then also, you alluded to this before, that she wasn't the only one partying, that she probably went to the clubs with Tori, and Tori wasn't receiving sort of the same backlash that she was. So is it fair to say that she was, I don't want to say singled out in a way, but singled out?
It's hard to know, Pete, you know, when you singled out, or do you make yourself available so you get said singled out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's the latter one too, Lur, myself. You see, I don't know. We just saw this interview, right? The day after these things, she's been sued.
Yes.
There she is. You both commented how terrific she looked.
Yes.
And I think she enjoyed that interview. She looked totally. Like she was enjoying it.
So she you think she got caught up in the sway sort of the drama and the press and all that?
Well, Aaron, do you find that a lot of actors, younger actors, or maybe now even they're more wary of it and know the things that can go wrong and are more school? But this was the early 90s, and this was a broad, you know, Fox. Where the one thing that we didn't start on talking about, of course, is there's a strike going on in L.A.
Yes.
From the writers, and Larry and I walked those picket lines for certainly all through the 1980s. And, you know, there was just a different, you know, kind of sensibility about the world then in this and the broadcast. I know I brought up the strike. One of the issues in 1988 was that Fox did not want to, they wanted to be considered a network, but they didn't want to pay the same rates for their talent as CBS, ABC, and NBC, the big three. And so I used to say to them all the time, when you want to make me bend over, you become a network. And when I want you to pay for something that we're doing, you become a broadcast service. And I think that was how it was. It was kind of just all, you know, when young people, and by the way, there weren't that many young people in primetime at that point. Primetime in the 80s was kind of a mature place for Larry Hagman and John Forsythe and Archie Bunker. And,
right.
You know, it wasn't the youth culture that we talk about in the times of the 60s, 70s, older times. That was in the rock and roll business, man. And that was somewhat in features. It wasn't in TV.
Right.
There was no MTV. There was no CW or UP or, you know, like going that way. I mean, someone named a writer from Esquire wrote a column and saying, you know, that there would be no CW without the without 90210.
Sure, totally.
None of that. We were there for that. So
it was from the kids' point of view. It was the first show, really, with the kids' point of view, not the parents' point of view.
And that was all Darren Star. And the fact of the matter is that so it was brand new territory, and getting thrown into Quip. You know, not everybody knew how to behave. Jason was pretty wild guy too, but he was behind the scenes a little bit.
Look, and Catherine West brings this point up that Tori was also well-behaved on set. So even if she was out partying or whatnot, she would make her days. She wouldn't cause any trouble. She was. We've heard countless times here where she was kind to guest stars. She welcomed them onto set, and she was just so grateful and happy to be there. So
I've heard people say that about Shannon, too, while we've been here.
Yes, totally. Shannon had been that way, but Tori had a...
If Tori came to the set one day and was feeling really rotten, she didn't have the luxury of showing how rotten she felt.
Right.
She didn't have the luxury of taking it out on other people. She was the boss's daughter. So she's walking on eggshells the whole, at least in those times that I've deemed what the relationship of Aaron and Tori, I've said point blank, if you were Tori Spelling, and you had an issue with something, would you call your father? Would you call me? You'd call your father. Of course, I would too.
Yes.
So I don't know kind of what Tori was thinking most of the time.
Right. But so Shannon's behavior on set, not just at parties, but that was also a big part of this story because
punctuality was the biggest one. And Tori didn't have that issue as much as Shannon did, but she had it. And by the time it was the end of the fifth year, at least, Shannon was gone. Tori's numbers were equally as bad as Shannon's ever were.
About turning late, showing up about late.
Coming late, yeah. She didn't have a good,
Well, my question is, I have a few more clips, there is a story that they've all shared in their various books and whatnot, and I'm curious to get your take on it, how it was presented to you, that they all got together and voted her off the island, essentially, right? That the group of them, and there's all different accounts of this story. What is your account of it?
What you know is true. They had to reshoot something. They were all there because of her. She didn't show up. They were only there because of her. She didn't show up on time. They, in those moments, would usually call Paul Wagner or me. This one they called Aaron Spelling. And this time it was Jason on the phone, and it was Jason. Because all the other times when other actors had issues or wanted there to be some action, Jay was the buffer. And Jay was no longer the buffer at that moment. They were caught up in it at that moment, and the call went to Aaron, and then I was informed. I've informed on this podcast that there was Aaron part of that whole thing about yes, cast, forget about it. And this was right when we were doing the pickups for the season 5. And
explain what a pickup is briefly so that people
understand. So that everybody knows the show is been picked up.
And you're getting everyone's contracts together.
And you're getting everyone's contract. But one of the things that the companies have to do is they have to send you an official notice that you are being picked up. It's one thing with the show to be picked up. This is that you are being picked up.
Right.
And I got a call from our business affairs person saying, do you know that Aaron is sending that out to Shannon? That she's being picked up. And I said, what?
After the whole meeting?
After the meeting, after the thing. He still, he wanted it both ways. And,
right.
And he wanted to hedge his bet. I don't know what he was thinking. I forget the response. I know that I said that you must tell the equivalent, you must tell the network. You must not send this out. And you must tell the network that there's some issue about this.
So you were holding it. You held it to see how this played out and did not.
No, I no, it was within 20 minutes that it was all rectified.
Right. Yeah.
Because he made a call and Gruce, because, you know, they had already announced it. It was there.
Yes.
It was, we're moving on, you know, and then you're having second thoughts. And instead of calling the network, calling, you know, Barry, well, Barry was gone by the time, but calling the network or, you know, having us run down and myself and Steve and Jess at that time, he's just, I'm going to do it this way. And he would have come up with a silly response. It was, you know, look at Steve and Jessica, may both live in rest in peace and all good time, because they were a loving couple, they were loving parents to Shira. They were really, you know, fine in that point. But you know, there were problems.
Yes.
And we were seeing it creatively in front of us. None of us were getting as much of a window on it as I did, because I collaborated on the last Mr. Walsh Goes to Washington, and I could see that why am I doing all the why is this like this? I'm the one in charge. Why are they all walking out of the room on me? Went back and forth. And, you know, it was not a pleasant moment. It was not a good week.
Steve and Jessica were going through the early stages of a divorce.
Yeah. They were in the step of having a divorce.
Right.
And the Aaron's response to this, we're like, what did you do? And also that meant, because I, you know, was out of the, you know, what, I mean, you know, I still was at the show, but you know, there they were, and we were really concerned about this, especially because he had signed an agreement with them that as long as they stayed on the show, that if I left, they would become the showrunners. And when we brought it to Aaron Spelling's attention that this was Paul Wagner and myself, that this was problematic, and this was the thing, he went, oh, a little creative tension between a married couple is good in the writer's room. What kind of idiotic is that? Right. What was that? And I wouldn't, and even at the time he said that to me, I think I rolled my eyes in front of him. He said, well, you don't agree. I said, well, I don't know that many divorced people or something like that. I got
right. Out of the question. Very real witty. Quick. Yeah.
But, you know, it was a big mistake. It was a big mistake for this television show, quite frankly. And I don't mean that they keep them involved.
But
to put them in that kind of situation. And because when you run a TV show, you have to, at a certain point, if you're going to be reasonably successful at it, you got to be selfless. You have to put everybody else's things in front of you and stay in the back. And all of them do that. All the most successful ones today, you know, tough as we hear that, you know, that some of them are, you know, that's has to be. You have to be the adult all the time. And if you're hurt and you're fighting with someone else over, you know, personal issues, it's not the way to run a show.
Aaron, I have a question for you. When you look at this, when you look at the coverage that Shannon got based on your experience working in news, what do you think of the coverage looking at it? And could you get away with some of that stuff today?
I often think, I mean, watching interviews with Shannon and also with Jenny, you know, on some of the talk shows in the early 90s, I always think, I don't think that a young woman would be asked some of the things that they are asked today. And, you know, it does seem overly harsh and just like they were trying to kind of, you know, pit them against each other.
Yes. Okay. Well, Jason Carter was on our show a while back and he recounted a story about that night of this fight.
I know Larry doesn't know. Nobody knows this.
No, that's. I don't think that's the clip. Here's Jessica Klein on what she thought of Shannon's performances.
At least as a writer and as a fan now looking at you, I was amazed by a couple of things in this episode. One, how awful her wardrobe was. Mm. There were some scenes where it was so bad, like at the fair,
the carnival.
At the carnival. But it played up her innocence.
Yes.
And she was being played as a regular girl. I thought it helped sell the character, even though if she didn't particularly look that great. And that was testament, I think, to the fact that she came to play at the end. So it's like all those times that she didn't, she did here, she delivered. And that last scene, she sold it so beautifully. And I really loved the scene. I loved her talking about how her parents looked at Brandon and they'd never looked at her that way. And how she looked at them looking at him in the scene in the Walsh living room watching.
Always nice to hear some. Yeah,
it's great to see Jessica.
Jessica back here.
So good there. It wasn't that long ago.
I know. I want to ask about this, the last episodes that she filmed, but this was, I think I found Jason Carter's story.
Obviously now I've become aware of it much more, is that a lot must have been going through her head at that particular time, but she didn't really talk to me. It was fine. It was absolutely fine, character-wise. Didn't talk to me off camera for like the first couple of episodes. It might have been three episodes, but we did scenes together, but she didn't talk to me conversationally. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's fine. I was in my own special world with the camera crew and just chatting away. But then on the fourth episode, I think it was the fourth, she invited me to her 23rd birthday party. Really? Like it just came out of left field. I'm just like, wow. Oh, all right. I'm going to your birthday party, which I did. And it was down in Hollywood. It was just behind the Gromans. It was some club behind the Gromans Chinese Theatre, I think. And there were fights there. And I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure. And then the bouncers were going crazy. And for some reason, I was in my, I had my arms around one maniac going, hey, the big man walks away. The big man walks away. The bouncers were on another guy going crazy. I learned an interesting lesson about life, though, because I nearly got this guy to the door. And then the bouncers grabbed him and he went crazy. And then the next day, there was all of these reports. I can't remember exactly about some big bust up at her birthday party and something to do with her ex-lovers. And I don't know how much of that was true or not.
Right.
But there were fights.
Imagine being the fish out of water at Shannon Dorff's birthday party. So you at some point know that she's leaving the show and you have to write her out of the show. Three's Company had Chrissy make phone calls in another room. What did you guys think about? Were there conversations? Were there meetings? What was the approach about how are we going to get her to play? Or what are we going to do with her?
We handed her the next script she had to do, which was the 60s episode.
So that's when this all shook out, was around that. Yeah. Is that one of the reasons why you did the 60s episode?
No.
Okay.
Did the 60s episode because we had 32 episodes.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, then we just...
Anniversary of Woodstock. And I'm an aging hippie, even then. So
I love the 60s episode.
I think we wanted to give her good stuff, though. We wanted to give her a lot of good stuff. We knew she was leaving.
The other podcast made a criticism about the 60s episode. So I just wanted to our friends Jenny and Amy Sugarman didn't love the 60s episode. So I just want to say that
they didn't love it.
No,
they don't love any of this stuff.
You know what I say to both of them?
Easy.
Aaron, you can write it. You know why you didn't love it? I said it to Luke Perry, too, because you didn't live it.
That's fair.
And you know what? So you know what I would say to Amy and Jenny? You missed it.
Yeah.
What you get is climbing.
Should have been there.
We got
I also 60s. Think, the think okay. some of the criticisms they miss because there's a disconnect. If you were an actor on the show, you didn't grow up watching the show, right? So you're not connected deeply to the stories like we would be. So I think there's a little bit of a disconnect sometimes when you're an actor and you're looking back on it because you don't know.
Well, the exaggeration is that how an actor reads a script. My line, bullshit, bullshit, my line, bullshit.
But it's a good episode in any way. So that's when it is. Now, Larry, you're now in the mix of this. You know that she's going to be leaving the show. You just said that you wanted to give her good stuff.
Because we love her. I mean, from the writer's point of view, she does exactly what you want. She never questioned the script, never said didn't want to do this or that. Just read the stuff the way you imagined it. So then we just, we were going to put it in the storyline with Tennessee Williams, for the advice.
I can't get over that thing about them, though, that Amy Sugarman.
It's like that every episode, Chuck. Jason they only see Priestley's their performance
in that episode is magnificent.
The whole episode's magnificent. I mean, everyone's performances are magnificent. Yeah. So you give
30 years ago, at least anyway. I don't leech off that.
Anyway, you give Shannon this whole thing with the with Roy Randolph and the play and all that stuff, and that's how we're going to wrap. Did you guys say to yourself, this is something that she will enjoy doing?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's just, you know, you got to play Tennessee Williams within the show. It's spectacular, you know?
Okay, so then, you know...
But it was a hope that she would rise to it.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, that was a hope.
We didn't know how Jenny would be in it. We didn't know, you know...
And then Tracy Middendorf, you know, probably was the best when you look at it, just looking at it as an audition tape of all the three performances. You know, she probably was best.
We have to talk about this element of it. Hang on. Let's watch this together, guys.
I was packing my bags for London, and I realized there was something I had to do before I left.
But you don't leave for another week, Brenda.
I know, but what happens in this week could change the rest of my life.
What's with all the melodrama?
Sorry. I just needed to talk to you. I mean, I figured that you were the only person who would understand.
What?
I was with my parents this morning watching Brandon on TV.
I saw it.
I mean, there was my brother shaking hands with the President of the United States. You should see my parents, Dylan. There was such pride in their eyes. I've never seen them look at me like that, ever.
Well, Bren...
The only time I've ever felt anything close to that was when I was on stage. And then it wasn't just my parents, you know? It was like a whole audience applauding me. I want it, Dylan. That's why I'm going to London.
I understand.
I knew you would. You always understand me. You believe in me, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Dylan, I love you. I've never stopped loving you. And I know now I never will.
I'll applaud you from afar.
I want more than your applause. I won't be gone forever, Dylan. Give me something to come back to.
So she gets this beautiful scene with Luke. It's so incredible. What do you guys think? We talked about this once before, Larry, looking back on the scene, what do you think of it?
I just love her. I just love her work. I mean, they, as much as, you know, there were sparks flying, you know, in the other way between them, when they were together as these characters, there was so much heat between them, and they really went at these scenes. I mean, they really, because you know how when they yell cut, they wouldn't stop.
Right.
It would continue on after the director yelled cut.
Right. That's interesting.
What?
Yes. I have tape of it. I have tape of it. I saved somewhere in my storage.
Yeah. Oh, so that's
interesting. Must have been on Little Fish when they kissed there.
Yeah.
I think it was this one.
I think it was this one.
You have this tape.
Somewhere.
That's so sad. It's so sad.
I saved it because it was like unbelievable. It was never in cut, and they just kept going.
Wow.
And, you know, it was hands of plenty.
This is going to go viral tonight. Now, this little scene. So
that was great.
Fan of 90210,
she was going to come back. Also,
so this is what I was going to ask.
She's going to get benched for a while, and then she was going to come back.
I mean, as a super fan of 90210, I always hoped that you left it that way, so that Shannon Doherty returns to 90210 at some point. And it's a huge sweeps week. It's everything that everybody dreams of. Yeah, everyone dreams of. Larry, did you think that that would happen at some point?
Of course we did. We always hoped for that and kept going up and asking if we could do it. And we never got the go ahead.
What about you, Chuck?
After a year, he probably had the idea to put her in Charmed already.
Did you ever think, Chuck, that she would return? That this would blow over and she would come back at some point?
No, I didn't give it. I know it, and in 2020 hindsight, it seems illogical to not give it much thought, but I knew she wasn't coming back in season 5.
Yeah,
that
was only there for season 5. Had I stayed for season 6, I'm right with Larry. I would have tried to get that to happen.
I mean, we had to keep her alive. We couldn't just forget about certainly the character.
Certainly.
So we had to mention her over and over.
Bring them both back. You know, yeah. I mean, that would be the other one. But, you know, because you're looking for things to do and you know, connections that are deep.
And there's nothing deeper than the two of them. So I mean,
before we came on, Chuck, you said this, and I think this is an interesting note, that it didn't have to be drawn out like it was, right? The whole thing with Shannon and whatnot. So I'm curious, looking back, is there anything that could have been done differently in this situation that maybe could have kept her on the show? Is there anything that could have been done?
Of course. And I suggested it. It wasn't carried out. But what I would have done is I would have made it that she had a driver and who was at her house every morning to take her to the set, take her home to the set. That's what our responsibility to her is get her on time.
She was that valuable.
And to show some more strength.
But I mean, people would have resented that. That's the other thing. The other cast might resent that. I mean, again, you're in a little bit of a, you know, it's so much pressure on everybody. So much hard.
Find their way. You know, old Hollywood, they all used to drive them to the set.
Right.
That's why the moguls knew, unlike the modern moguls, and maybe Spelling, I think Spelling knew it too, because Spelling was like a mogul. He was like them. The reason that they were here was because we had a contract for them to be there, not because this was where they absolutely wanted to be and did it. And this is what our show needs to get ahead right now. This is what we're going to do. And that was what was not. You can't have a policy like that if you're the head, if you're the boss. And you're trying to be everybody's best friend, great uncle, Uncle Aaron, and all of that. Sometimes you just need to be, this is what we're doing, and this is why we're doing it. And that's how Aaron was when it was Aaron's Broadcasting Company. But he didn't want to be that with this crew. You know, Jason and Luke were his friends as far as he was concerned. And they were, if you talk to them, they saw themselves as friends of Aaron.
Aaron, do you...
Certainly Luke did.
Erin, do you have any questions about this topic?
Well, I have a couple of questions. One of them is, what would Brenda's season 5 storyline look like if she had stayed? I also was curious, I think in the second to last episode of season 4, Jim makes a comment to someone like, oh, our best friends live in Buffalo. So I was curious at what point in the writing process you kind of started setting the scene for Val.
That's great. Great questions.
I don't think we thought about Val till after that season was over. Do you remember that, Chuck, at all? I think we probably
planted it in. Aaron, you're talking about near the end of season 4?
Yeah. Episode 30.
The girl would be coming from Buffalo and be the friend, the daughter of that. That probably was approved. Hmm. That probably was already pitched to the network and approved. Whether we didn't know if it was Tiffany.
Yeah, the Eddie says that, right? Doesn't Eddie say something about having friends from New York, or they have friends from New York, or Eddie Buffalo, the stage manager?
Yeah, Buffalo.
Yeah.
It's the old joke. Yeah. It's the old joke.
I love Eddie the stage manager, by the way. Buffalo, you know? We never got Eddie the stage manager on here. Is he still alive?
Yeah, he's still alive. He's still alive.
God, but, he was so good.
The Brenda storyline would probably, you know, I don't know.
It could have been one or the other. It could have been, we already had it approved, and here was the reference, or, well, where do that? We mentioned the friends in Buffalo. So how about if this is the daughter from Buffalo? Because we got to assume that most of their good friends were from Minneapolis, St. Paul area, you know,
right?
Minnesota. Yeah.
Did you answer about what the storyline would be? I missed that.
The storyline would.
We probably would bring in
another guy for, and then kind of have the loop thing in the background and just kind of tease this and that and keep, you know, working the triangle a bit while she studies acting and has.
Your mindset, success. Though, at the time was not looking for more story for the Brenda Walsh character.
No, it was
your mindset was going, how do we write this person out of this show?
No, we did, and we felt we did a great job.
No, now the thing was, how do we just keep it going?
Right. Right.
She wasn't an Armada. It's an interesting question. Maybe the fan fiction folks can start thinking about that. What would you have done?
Yeah. Well, also that week she talks about always fascinates me. You know, she doesn't leave for London for a week, and it's never covered what happened that week before she left. So that's
there's really
that
I have really pulled could a, be done. Really nice.
There's, there's the movie.
Fans could go to Pluto TV and watch the episodes. I pulled a couple of really nice clips from Mr. Walsh of her saying goodbye to Carol Potter's character and also to Tori Spelling's to Donna Martin as well. They're really beautiful scenes with the characters, and I think that you gave her a really nice exit and one that was hopeful for a return. So in comparing it to how other main characters were written off, I think you guys did a really great job of keeping that character alive.
Well, she had a triumph, which was great. Everyone goes against her during the Divas storyline because they think she slept with Roy. And everyone other than Dylan basically shits on her for at one point or the other. Even her brother is not certain that she didn't.
Steve, of course, is the worst.
Steve as well, because he's, just like, he's just with the
animal.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But, I mean, so that's the thing. But then she has her big triumph, and so she does get a great way to go out.
Shannon is an incredible actor. She's going around doing 90s cons now, and we think the world of her here at the show. I'm speaking for all of us. And we just love what she brought to the show. And as a super fan, so grateful and thankful for what she gave 90210 in the four seasons that she was there. It's one of the reasons why we kept watching and through those 4 years. I mean, we loved the growth of the character and the depth of her work, right? Chuck said I would say all this, so there it is. And so I think it's unfortunate that happened, but it was a different time. I think there would be a lot of different things in play today that would prevent something like that from happening. I think the media would come into question. I think there'd be a Twitter outrage. I think there would be so much more shit that could happen now that couldn't happen then.
Oh, I don't think, I think that Brian has actually said the most interesting stuff relative to why the show was successful when it was successful, because it gave people a window into, you know, a life they didn't know very much about, you know, how do the rich live and rich kids and stuff like that. You know, once it certainly got mined a lot afterwards, but once you had, you know, Twitter and Facebook and things like that, much of what made our show unique and can't miss television, if you want to look at it in that way, was completely would be wiped out by all the other backstage and depth that and in depth that people look at celebrity and celebrity lives.
Yeah. Larry, any final thoughts on the Brenda
show? No, I'm going to take my dog out.
Aaron, any final thoughts?
No, I'll let Larry go.
Chuck, any final thoughts?
You know, it's interesting when you said that, well, we didn't have all those things. And then, you know, if they did, then this stuff wouldn't have happened. And it wouldn't have been these unfortunate things, but these unfortunate things, unfortunately, also were the motivation that gave some of the energy and some of the edge.
Totally. You know, was it
unfortunate that for the first 12 episodes, Darren and I didn't get along?
Right. But that helped.
Well, creative tension, Chuck.
Creative tension. What a creative tension. Creative tension. Yeah, but we weren't married. We weren't married. But the same time, you know, you did have that, and I think that was, you know, true. And
Shannon leaves. Tiffany comes in and delivers on a whole other level, a different way, not better, just different, and brings
Yes, but it really bothers me to realize that when I, you know, we'll see on Facebook because I get, oh, this somebody said something and okay, what do they say? And you just realize that, you know, that people don't like things that we did with, you know, Kelly Taylor because of this triangle thing and that, you know, that became so important and dominant and, you know, the likability of it and people really, we had no idea, you know, that we're living so many people, especially from small town America, living vicariously through Brenda's character, being in Beverly Hills and being what if a small town girl went there, and that could be me and that. And so that primal identification, and that gets jettisoned, and all of a sudden, no, I don't like the show after that. So it didn't matter. You know,
it's so bizarre.
Tiffany did beautiful things. Didn't matter. These a lot of our audience, real certainly from years one through three, they shut off.
The thing is, too,
and that's sad.
They're still living vicariously through it. They've watched the show for 10 seasons and still have this grudge about what happened with the triangle between television characters. You know, for the most
part, we were just making it everything that I told about every time I tell a story about being in Spelling's office or being in this or being with Paul or the meetings or in the writer's room. We were making a television show. We weren't thinking about, you know, the
32 years later
of how this was going to play in 20 years or 25 years or 30 years. And if it wasn't for you, Pete,
sorry,
I didn't even have to be thinking about it. So there you go.
Well, thank you for that. I want to also mention Tina Turner passed away, guys. I don't know if
so sad.
She's such a beautiful artist.
Sad because from a personal standpoint in the Rosen world or really the Passman world, my daughter's Lindsay's father-in-law is a very prominent music lawyer, and anyone in the music business knows who he is. And many have read his book about the business of the music business, which is like in its 15th edition, and that it's the Bible of how to do the music business. And his career changed fundamentally when Tina Turner in the 1980s became his client.
Wait, two more quick questions. I thought Shannon also wanted to leave, that it was mutual. Is that true?
I don't think she was happy there. So yes, I think there is part of that would be true.
Okay. I don't understand this. OMG, they didn't talk about how the fans wanted Brenda and Dylan with Dylan and why Dylan chose Kelly. Shannon was an incredible actor. What did we not talk about? I don't know what that means. Like, what are you talking about? We just talked about it. Sorry to end on such a negative sour note.
What was that?
I don't even understand what the point is. Oh my God,
they didn't talk about how the fans... You know, what the fans did for the show was allow us to have a nice life.
Yes, but the fans all of you.
We did not have a... How we consulted with the fans... In the beginning, this was Steve, and we've talked about this, is Prodigy was a brand new social network, and we would see what the fans were saying about our characters, and then we would try to mold it in the beginning. We did a lot of that at the end of season one, going into season two, certainly when that came out. But, you know, the fans, Shonda Rhimes thinks about the fans, but she also thinks about her actors, and she thinks about her ratings, and she thinks the fans was not preeminent. Mr. Spelling used to think about the audience a lot,
sure,
and what the audience would want. And you know, you make a show for an audience.
The
fans are there, but the fans are not, that the fans wanted Brenda over Kelly. You know who wanted Kelly over Brenda? Luke Perry.
Right.
And Luke Perry, I was dependent on keeping Luke Perry happy, since I was not doing a very good job keeping Shannon Doherty happy. Right. So I would listen to the people who came to me who wanted to.
The funny thing is, Chuck, we've been watching a whole season of Succession. Do you think 30 years from now people are going to do a fucking podcast about... killing, I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but a main character just suddenly being off the show. Do you think people are going to be, this was the devastating moment in television history? You know what I mean? Well, like, come on.
He's unhappy, I read today, because he feels he should have not died so early. There was too much buzz without him.
All right, guys. This has been a great week of podcasts. It's good to see you all live again. And
thank you for coming, Aaron. Soon. Great to see you.
Yeah.
Great to see you all.
Thank you all.
Yeah.